Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today, we are returning to the topic of homelessness in the Salt Lake Valley. In just a little bit, you'll hear from Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall on the drivers of homelessness in our region, namely the affordable housing crisis. I'll ask her how the actions of the city's redevelopment agency influence housing costs, and we'll also talk about some proposed creative solutions to house those who are experiencing homelessness. And actually, one creative short-term fix that a Salt Lake City resident undertook of his own accord was what brought us to this topic this week. Darren Mann is a community organizer, activist, and resident of the Fair Park neighborhood. He's also the director of an organization called The Village Cooperative. Last month, Mann invited people who were experiencing homelessness to come camp on his property, and he gave them access to his bathroom and his shower. I caught up with Darren Mann on Tuesday, and he told me that the reason he decided to take that unusual step had to do with the cleanups of homeless encampments by the Salt Lake County Health Department, cleanups that move campers from one place to another. Mann calls them pushes.
I was tired of seeing all of the pushes that were happening for the homeless camps throughout the city. We have quite a few, and they're, you know, you take a drive down and you just see tents everywhere. Because we've, you know, shut down some shelters and access to beds. I mean, it fluctuates all the time. And so you just have people that don't have the consistency to get their lives back on track. So they have these camps and then they're pushed. And I've been helping out at these camps, building donation centers, like with out of pallets and like storage boxes for them. And once there was a big push of the Sears camp, a lot of drug elements got introduced to Camp Last Hope. And so the people that were fleeing that didn't want to be around that. I offered them space because I just figured the buck has to stop somewhere. And if we start to step up as private residents and use some of the privileges we have, which I have land that I don't use all of the time, I could offer sanctuary in the form of, you know, they're not at least getting harassed and being asked to move from one block to the next block until it becomes their problem. They could have a little bit of stability. And so that was the genesis of why I decided to do it. So it's fluctuated between anywhere from 5 to 15 people at the camp at any given time. 10 is usually the number that we try to keep it at, because 15 was just a little too much for our tiny little 3-acre plot. So basically you have, it's on a little urban farm. So basically you have like these hugel mounds, which have perennial plants like asparagus and stuff, and fruit trees. And then you have these tents in between all of them. And there's, you know, there's a small 2-man tents and then four man tents, and then even bigger tents for the couples. You know, like we got a really nice donation for the couple of the woman that passed, and she was kind of joking. She was like, I got a mansion now, because it's a huge, massive tent. And yeah, and so
Darren Mann there mentions the fact that there was a woman camping on his property who died. That happened this past week. Police suspect that she and her partner suffered carbon monoxide poisoning from burning fuel inside their tent to try to keep warm. After that happened, Salt Lake City helped transport remaining campers from Mann's property to available shelter, at least those who were willing to go. Mann told me that he wasn't yet sure whether he would reopen his property to people who are homeless, at least for the time being. For one thing, he's sensitive to the impact that doing so has on his neighborhood, but he's also just not sure he's prepared to do it in the wake of that tragedy. In the meantime, he's launched a fundraiser for his vision for another creative fix for homelessness, a tiny home community / urban farm / workshop campus somewhere in Salt Lake City.
You know, you'd have your allotted space for temporary camping, right, where you have your camping centers. And then you would start to enroll people into the program and give them access to the semi-permanent tiny housing, which would be, you know, your working in the garden or in the workshops developing straight trade skills for a year, up to, you know, a year or 2 years, and then you're hopefully by then you're transferring, you know, you have a steady income and you've been steady for about 2 years with your own independence, and then you're able to transition out and into your own home, you know. Yeah, and you could grow it. I think this would be a precedent where, you know, I mean, community first model is, I think, 50 acres, talking off the top of my head, and they have RV homes available, tiny homes, and other forms of shelter, and it just keeps growing. And that's what would be really, really quite beautiful, is we're kind of we're in a housing crisis right now where we have affordable housing, and basically all these people from California are raising the rents, and people who already live here in Utah are like, well, I can't afford to live there. So if we could rezone and start to have tiny home communities and with urban gardens and are doing stuff that's regenerative for our environment, not only are we addressing homelessness, but then we start to go into the realm of we're addressing our ecology and our dirty air, because then we can start to introduce plants that are indigenous to this area, stop having Kentucky bluegrass, start having clovers and, you know, fruit trees, and really starting to establish a food system that is really ecologically friendly and regenerative to our environment.
Again, that's Darren Mann, who you can tell just by listening is a bit of an idealist, right? But he's trying to take outside-the-box actions to address a problem he feels he can't ignore, and that he doesn't think the rest of us should ignore either, by the way.
They're just people like you and me, and they just have had struggles. I think it's just kind of taking ourselves out of our me and mine mindset, and like, what, this is mine, and I'm going to protect what's mine. And kind of like look outside and be like, well, what about us, all of us together as one? How are we treating each other? You can judge a society by how we treat the lowest among us. And we don't do a very good job right now, but that doesn't mean that we can't do better. So next time you see an unsheltered person on the street, maybe don't just ignore them. Maybe say hi and get to know them. Maybe just that small token will change our community for the better. And if that's all you can do, do that.
Again, that's Darren Mann, an activist and community organizer who runs a group called the Village Cooperative, an urban farm collective in the Rose Park and Fair Park neighborhoods in Salt Lake City. Now on the show, we'll turn to my conversation with Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall. We touch on homelessness, the drivers of homelessness, the shelter-resistant community, and even that idea of tiny homes as a potential solution. I sat down with the mayor via Zoom on Wednesday afternoon. Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall, thank you once again for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
You know, I invited you on for a conversation about some alternative ideas for housing people who are out on the streets. However, before we go there, I want to actually ask you about one of the causes of homelessness, the affordable housing crisis, because some reporting by the Salt Lake Tribune's Leah Larson caught my attention today. She wrote a story about dozens of renters being evicted from the Annex and the Carlton Hotel in downtown Salt Lake City after those buildings got sold to a Chicago developer, which means dozens more people are now trying to find affordable housing in an already crunched market. Leah's article references this report by the Utah Department of Workforce Services that talks about the role of investment property in the affordable housing crisis. That report says, and I'm going to quote here, "Developers tend to buy up properties and build or renovate them to high income standards to maximize the value of their land. While these newly built and rehabilitated structures increase the number of housing units relative to demand, which increases vacancy rates, they are not necessarily primary places of residence, but vehicles for wealth storage." Leah's article features people critical of Salt Lake City's redevelopment agency, people who say that by giving tax credits or loans to developers, the RDA is helping to drive this problem. So finally, we come to a question for you, Mayor Mendenhall. Is the RDA prioritizing the wrong kind of development in Salt Lake City?
No. Absolutely not. And here's the reason. Salt Lake City is emerging as a strong tier two city in this country. We have the fastest growing population in the United States and one of the strongest economies really over the last many years, but even still through the pandemic, a very strong economy. And you couple that with the opportunity zone layers that are scattered throughout our city, that entices some larger development groups to come and look at putting money into housing in particular here. But the development that's coming in here is not because the RDA exists. It is but for the existence of the RDA that we are able to insert affordability into housing projects that otherwise may not have even contemplated it. In addition to that, we're getting a depth of affordability that the market itself would not create. So we're talking about people making in particular 40% and below of the area median income, which the city doesn't determine. We get it from the county, but it's really according to a HUD formula that they put together. So the RDA works to build affordability into every housing project that we might participate in really what is a fractional way. When you look at the overall cost of these projects, the RDA is usually at about 10% or less, but over the last 5 years, the city's contributed almost $65 million into affordable housing projects. That's produced about 2,500 units. There's hundreds more in the pipeline right now. And we have not, at least since Danny Walls has been the director of the RDA, haven't participated in a single project that was all market rate. So every project that the RDA has participated in under his direction has had affordability in it, which is not true of the entire history of the RDA over the last 50 years.
And that's an interesting side note. We could go down that rabbit hole, but I think we'll leave that aside. And maybe just leaving RDA aside for a second, the idea of development of units as a vehicle for wealth storage, you know, we see a lot of building in our city. Is there a kind of property speculation going on out there in our city where people are buying and holding with the idea of increasing or maintaining their wealth?
We have seen that, and we've seen it for about 13 years in Salt Lake City. And there's much smarter people like James Wood at the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute who make a life of telling us about how the market and housing are engaging. We've seen this happening for a very, very long time. And as I said, it's really but for government that we have the depth of affordability happening in as strong a market with a growing population that we have. It's critical that the city, the county, and the state of Utah be investing in the depth of affordability that the market is just not going to naturally create. And that's been our focus as a city. That's why we've committed more money toward affordable housing than the state of Utah has over the last 5 years.
You know, it's tough because the market is also, the market by itself is leaving out a lot of people who can't access housing. And that kind of brings us to the topic of creative ideas that are out there to help people who find themselves homeless. There is the official system, the relatively new homeless resource center model that is, I believe, the, you know, where the bulk of the focus is, and probably the bulk of the work that is being done on homelessness is being done in those centers. There are, as I think most people listening know, those out there in the unsheltered community who are quote unquote shelter resistant, who maybe don't feel comfortable with the congregate setting. There are a lot of ideas floating out around out there that are creative solutions for this group. And one of those ideas is something like a tiny home community. This is an idea that you have talked about before as a city council member and in the lead up to your becoming mayor. Is it one that you support for Salt Lake City, a tiny home model somewhere out there?
Yes, it is. And late in 2020, I brought together a preliminary group of stakeholders to talk about how might we pursue not only a pilot project, but one that informs scaling in the future. How big do we grow? How fast do we grow? And what kind of partners do we need there from the beginning to make it successful for individuals, in particular, chronically homeless individuals who, as you said, have been shelter resistant? The Homeless Resource Center model is working really, really well for most people who experience homelessness. It actually has tremendous results. There needs to be more homeless resource center models throughout the state of Utah. but that's not in my hands. So what I can control as the mayor of the capital city is the convening of these conversations about what can happen here. The city has land, we have zoning, and hopefully we're in the middle of the session, but land use authority going forward to make sure that we can allow something like this to happen, because right now the zoning doesn't even allow it. But we have seen other cities around the country, from the biggest one and most popular one outside of Austin, Texas, to some models in Eugene, Oregon, Detroit, Michigan, and other parts of the country, where it's working very well at attracting. And as one of my favorite homeless service providers out of King County in Washington would say, you'd romance people into services. It takes a long time sometimes, particularly those who don't want to fit, so to speak, into the system as it's been. So the dignity, the independence, and the sense of community that remains and is fostered in these managed tiny home projects is something we need here in Salt Lake City. And it's something that I hope to have a plan that's hitting the ground by the end of 2021.
You know, there's somebody else who is advocating for this and trying actually to fundraise already to get something like a tiny home community started is city resident Darren Mann. He lives in the Fair Park neighborhood. He decided to actually invite people to camp on his property to let people use his bathroom and shower. He said that was temporary, and it ended up being that because there was also this tragedy that occurred there with one of the campers who died, likely of carbon monoxide poisoning from burning fuel inside of her tent. That could have happened, of course, anywhere, whether or not it was on this private property. Maybe leaving aside tiny homes for just a minute, Darren Mann's action, you know, he told me that he felt compelled to do something, and that's why he invited people to his own property to camp out. What do you think of that, of residents using their own property or taking their own initiative to try and help like that?
Well, I want to say first off that what happened over the weekend is a tragedy, and no matter where it happened, as you said, it could have happened in a tent anywhere in Salt Lake City. But it is tragic, and the character of Salt Lake City residents in particular, is one of incredible compassion and ingenuity. So we feel as a city, and I know I can say this for our partners at the county who do the engagement work, driven and committed to making sure that there are better options for people to in the future than we have for them today, even though we have more shelter beds available. I think one of the biggest tragedies of what happened last weekend was that that very night there was capacity in every one of the shelters in the system, even in the hotel, airport, in winter overflow, where people have their own room and bathroom and couples can be together. There was capacity. It didn't need to happen. And our goal as a city every single day is to make sure that people have the option of shelter if they want it, and that we're giving people the unique resources they need as individuals. Unfortunately, when we put barriers, even unintentional ones, between connecting individuals with those resources, we can end up prolonging the amount of time that people are experiencing homelessness on our streets.
And I guess that I would have you address the idea of individuals taking their own initiative to try and help people. I mean, we are, right, as you said, a giving society, a giving community. What about individuals saying, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and do X, and that X might be, or at least in the case of Darren Mann, inviting them onto his property. I don't know how you talk about all of that together, but.
Homelessness is complex. And it is as complex as the individuals who are experiencing it. The circumstances are not straightforward. And I think we heard that from Mr. Mann after the case of the tragedy, that this is a very complex issue, and simply creating space, which inadvertently, it was not his own property. It was the city right of way that was fenced by his property that these people were invited to camp on. Even that situation is complex in and of itself. But the best thing that our residents can do, with the tremendous compassion that they consistently have for everyone who is in need, is to help connect them with the resources that exist. Those shelter beds, even though we wish we had more, there are shelter beds available. Our Volunteers of America, our city's police department, social workers, co-responder model, who can work with people in mental health crises and other challenging circumstances. We're there. We want to help. There are resources we can connect people with. Please help us make those connections.
You know, again, you really would hope that people would choose to go to shelter to start getting into the official system. Some people, I think, won't do it simply because it's the official system, or they don't want the congregate setting in the age of COVID. But in terms of out-of-the-box ideas, you know, Darren Mann has this sort of specific idea of a farm and job training and a tiny home community. You mentioned those other places that are managed tiny home communities. Is that a place that Salt Lake City might go where you have, I don't know, the utopian idea that Darren's presenting of an urban farm and people working in workshops or, you know, in the orchard? Is that feasible?
As you mentioned, I have been talking about a managed tiny home community that is resident driven and focused, that has not only resources, but reasons to thrive and the infrastructure to thrive. And that can be, as we've seen in Austin, community gardens, cooking together, jobs within the community, and really just the human decency that everyone needs and wants. And that's what these communities across the country are finding really creative ways to achieve. Salt Lake City has all the ingredients that we need, I believe, to put together that very kind of opportunity for the people on our streets today who don't see themselves fitting into the system as it exists today.
You know, I hear quite a lot of talk about tiny home communities. And if for whatever reason, you talked about romancing people into the system to get them help. For whatever reason, tiny homes strikes a chord with people. If there are folks listening who are like, I really want to contribute to helping the city get that done, what should they do?
In order for us to establish this kind of a pilot project in the city, we are going to do a significant amount of community engagement, both to get the ideas from the community and hopefully their support for it to move forward. But for us to figure out how does it work best in Salt Lake City with four seasons, and most importantly, I think all of the community heart and resources that we're willing to put into it. So please stay tuned. And you can follow me at SLC Mayor. We will be putting that out there in the coming months as we start to launch the community conversation around it.
That is Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall wrapping up this edition of In the Hive. So what are your thoughts on all of this? Whose responsibility is this societal problem? What creative ideas do you have for tackling it? Weigh in at the In the Hive show post over at KCPW's Facebook page or email your thoughts to comments@kcpw.org. We'll try and feature them on a future show. And that's all the time we've got today. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks again for tuning in. Join us again next week.